Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We have, as Theosophists, have a declaration which we put forth, and this is how our union is made. The Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Here in Philadelphia, we endeavor to keep these ideas alive and before the public by two weekly meetings on Wednesday evenings from 7:30 to 8:30, and at 5:15 to 7:15, the library in the front is open. And we are presently studying the ocean of theosophy, and we're coming up on humanity. On Sunday, which we're all quite aware, we have a class from 11 to 12, and each month we take up a different theosophical idea. So the month of April has been on psychism and spirituality. Now this morning, our talk is going to be on higher and lower clairvoyance. Now, we're not going to give you the answers to anything. We're hopefully just going to spark your curiosity so that you will look for yourself and uncover the answers to that which you're looking for. So we'll begin.
We're going to be looking at lower clairvoyance first. And just for a start, to look at clairvoyance in general, the definition is the faculty of seeing with the inner eye or spiritual sight, innate or acquired by occult training. And we need to be aware that this power of clairvoyance is innate in all of us, but it's just a matter of how readily we are able to access this power. And that basically is what these two talks will be looking at today, the difference between the two, and about accessing, should we access it or not? And in order to really understand not only clairvoyance, but clairaudience and all these different powers, we have to look at, we have to be aware of the sevenfold nature of man. We have three higher characteristics of, we have mind, we have that Buddhi principle or the spiritual soul, and we have Atma or spirit. And these three are perpetual. That is, it is this group of three that reincarnates from life to life. The lower four, we start with, at the bottom, we start with the physical form, and then we look at prana, or that energy, and we're looking at the astral body, and then we're looking at the passions and desires. And these lower four are transient. They're different with each lifetime. So when we speak of the astral, we're looking at the astral body, is that is the design body, which is different with each life, and this is what the form is based upon. And then there's that astral that surrounds us all. And this is sevenfold, as everything else is sevenfold as well. And when we're speaking of clairvoyance, we're looking at the at which level of that astral that surrounds us is being accessed. In regards to lower clairvoyance, it is that person who doesn't really have control over what they're doing when they are accessing this, the lower astral for clairvoyance, and, you know, to look in the future, look in the past, look in the present. Whereas we'll be hearing that that higher aspect of the astral is the more like the Akashic records, that kind of thing. Whereas with the lower clairvoyance, we're looking at the most mundane, gross materialistic aspect of the astral. The astral light, as we said, contains all pictures of the past and the future of any person. And they can be seen with the inner senses. The lower clairvoyance is only able to access, as we said, the more materialistic levels. In ordinary or the lower clairvoyance, a vibration is connected to the brain first, then to the physical eye. But these are from, as we said, the lower aspects of the astral light. And what is received from these different lower areas are usually looked at as being transitory, very fragmented, and dealing with like material ideas and very illusionary. And it is said that using this power when we're looking at the lower realms of the astral light is dangerous when one is not really thoroughly knowing what they're doing. And we just wanted to read a quote here. Most, if not all, of these powers are the result of developing and freeing the latent powers of the astral body. The powers of all the senses of this body are greater than those of the physical body, so that when they are developed, we are able to see further, hear further, communicate further, and of course, see deeper and operate on a somewhat more causal plane. The question arises, however, are we always able to understand and interpret what we see and hear? Theosophy says that if we have not developed these powers the correct way, we can be led very far astray without gaining any of the rightful advantage. So the astral body has these, the true senses. the true hearing, the true sight. So this, in many respects, is what is being used to access that the astral light. And if we're not trained, if we're not along our path far enough, we can get into danger. And Mr. Crosby adds that we should only practice these powers, not just clairvoyance, but all the powers, only if the desire is to help others. If the desire is to help just ourselves, to think, oh, you know, so-and-so thinks I'm wonderful because I can read the future kind of a thing, then that negative aspect will hold somebody back. And the Bhagavad Gita says, without doubt, this is on page 49, without doubt, O thou of mighty arms, the mind is restless and hard to restrain, but it may be restrained, O son of Kunti, by practice and absence of desire. So the whole idea with being able to control the lower clairvoyance is by these senses, to try and use the astral body senses rather than using the physical senses. And this takes time and it takes practice. It's not necessarily something that we're going to accomplish in any one lifetime. Nothing is quick. Everything has to take its own time and its own course. And we did just want to end with another reading from the Gita. Goes from page 28 to 29. The senses and organs are esteemed great, but the thinking self is greater than they. The discriminating principle is greater than the thinking self, and that which is greater than the discriminating principle is he. Thus, knowing what is greater than the discriminating principle and strengthening the lower by the higher self, do thou of mighty arms slay this foe, which is formed from desire and is difficult to seize. And just one last thing. It says in the, we think it's in the ocean, but we know definitely the philosophy states that if everybody did not have some little portion of clairvoyance, it is said that we would really not be able to communicate with each other. So we all have it innate. It's just a matter of our spiritual progress and evolution as to how we will access it, what level it will be. Thank you.
Clairvoyance, clear seeing. So we can see, but if we do not understand what we see, what good is it? So clairvoyance is based upon true knowledge and true understanding. Now, this can only be achieved through an understanding of laws and principles. By so doing, by understanding the laws of not only our earth, but of the universe, is that once we understand them, we can work within them. But clairvoyance, well, we know for a fact that if any of us develop clairvoyance, even as a child, we'd probably be the best kept secret we had, because you couldn't tell anyone, because it's not understood. So to understand this, we have to understand that we are a unity. We are all connected. We are not separate. And this is the underlying principle of the universe. Everything is a unity. So it was mentioned that man has a septenary nature, but it's also man has seven planes of consciousness, seven states of matter, and that and there's seven planes of action as well. That a true clairvoyant sees on all seven planes at one time and in harmony. So there is nothing hid from a true clairvoyant, because those seven states and planes, we're aware of most of them. So once we understand what we are, divine beings, making our journey back to our spiritual home, that these powers are not really that astounding. However, you know, in this idea of psychism, many think that you can sit for development. Just sit and be passive. Let your mind wander. Let all the thoughts enter in and so forth and so on. No, we are told that is extremely dangerous, because what is trying to be accomplished is to see at a great distance. But where does all this take place? Well, as we said, it takes place on the astral plane, that plane which we do not see, but has a great deal of influence on us. And when we enter that sphere from this material plane, we are confronted with all the gross and negative and selfish acts and feelings that have been emanating from this earth for millions of years. So we can't do that. We can't jeopardize whatever sanity we have, because by becoming passive, these entities, good or bad, influence us. And therein lies the problem. So we have to be actively engaged. Well, to be actively engaged, that means that we have to be doing something. Because I think in the Gita it said that we are compelled to act. So the only action that is going to clear the way for any of these psychic powers is unselfishness, self-sacrifice. It's said that the soul rejoices when we commit acts of service to each other, to humanity, and we develop that selfless attitude. So it's nothing that we do directly, but it's what we are that we need to garner a fundamental love of passion for the earth and for everything on it, because we're united with it. We all know that, you know, the television has become a curse and a blessing, because when we see the devastation that are happening in the world and the suffering, our heart aches. Our heart aches. And again, that is a sign of the times in which we live in. When we know what we would like to do, but we can't do it in the grand scope of the world. But what we can do, we can develop a sense of altruism. develop a sense of self-sacrifice and devotion to the interest of humanity. So you can't sit and become a clairvoyant. It said in one of the readings that if you sat for 9 million years, the only thing that you have gained is sitting. Nothing else. So we have to understand the law. And that great law has a name of karma, or of harmony, or of readjustment. And we have to understand our place within that. And that the fact that we are the creators of this universe, individually and collectively, why, how we think and how we act makes a difference. Makes a profound difference. To be that voice in the wilderness for those that are searching for truth. And what we see are the illusions that we have created for ourselves, collectively. But we have to remember that we're spiritual beings, and these bodies are only vehicles. And that on the seven planes of consciousness, or the seven planes of, or seven states of matter, there's that which we need to know and understand. We barely understand this state of matter we're in now. But can we understand the others? So we are asked to gain knowledge, to gain understanding, and apply it, but apply it in the service of humanity. And we invite everyone here to read the Bhagavad Gita. It is stated how we can do this in this world in which we live in now. It is no secret. It is just sacrifice. You know, we say we sacrifice. Well, we're not going to eat that this week, or not going to eat this week. Well, how about sacrificing our comfort? How about sacrificing things that we value? Sacrifice is more than just on the physical plane. It's on all seven planes. Well, we hope we ignited a little spark. If you have any questions.
In the back.
We were thinking at night when we dream and in deep sleep when we access these higher planes and try and bring back through dreams to our conscious mind some kind of message, let's say, or some learning. Is there clairvoyance involved in that, but that we haven't learned yet the language of it, so we can't make sense of it? Does that come with, I guess, a development of true clairvoyance?
State that again, just in another way.
Something important we have on the tip of our brain, but we can't facilitate it, we can't understand it, but we know it was important. As we develop true clairvoyance, will that also become one of the powers or one of the benefits of true clairvoyance?
Well, when we dream and we go into a deep sleep, we are accessing that higher aspect of ourselves. So we grab it and we want to carry it back onto this plane. Well, to bring it back onto this plane, we have to go through the astral realm. And in that astral realm are all the things that will distract us, will pull us, will make us drop that gift that we just received at night. So our clairvoyance is nothing that we need to work on, nothing we need to try to develop. What we need to do is to be human beings. We have to develop a sense of altruism, but for everyone, and unselfishness, and then really put that to work for humanity. Now you say, well, gosh, what does that mean? How do I do that? Help. What do I do? Well, that's part of our karma. That's part of our dharma, our duty. We need to find that out for ourselves, what we need to do. When we find out what we need to do, then we can begin.
And we think, too, that as we progress along in our evolution and as we become more able to access those soul powers, that the two things will progress together, that more spiritual we become and can access those higher realms, we'll be bringing back the meanings of those dreams to the material plane. So at the same time then, as we're progressing, the ability to develop that true clairvoyance will also be happening at the same time, we think. Yes?
We think Mr. Judge likens it to living in a way that expresses the language of the soul, which was, everything mentioned, unity, altruism, brotherhood. If we start to live that way, we are speaking the soul's language, and therefore the dreams or the experiences in the deep sleep state, we will be able to translate better. It doesn't necessarily mean we're ready to follow them, but at least we'll know what the message is.
Yes, there's in fact, in the Gita, it talks about specific qualities of those great beings where clairvoyance is developed naturally in them. It's nothing that is forced. We have to remember, we can't force these things upon ourselves. If we do, it's going to be trouble. You have to develop our morality and our ethics. There's where we begin. And then by living by those precepts, one is altruistic, one is unselfish, and one lives to benefit others. We all have to find our own way about it, about doing anything. We have to decide for ourselves what we will do.
If one observes an event in say the astral or higher plane, is it acceptable or allowable for the person to act upon that event in the physical? Let's say one observes a crime in the privileged astral or higher plane. Can one act upon that knowledge in the physical plane, or is he being abusive of that privilege?
Well, we would think that to benefit humanity through an altruistic act is not a crime. But to be unrelated to what's going on, and they say, come in here with your psychic powers and solve this crime for us, that's a materialization of our true spiritual powers.
We were thinking the adepts must have been able to see that Pythagoras was going to be possibly murdered. And they didn't step in to prevent that crime. Why? Because it is a karma that has to unfold. So even if we see something, we shouldn't necessarily take extreme actions. We should maybe warn people, but we can't prevent karma. We can just interfere with it.
Yes, and interfere we do. But we have to be very, very careful. We do not want to become the karmic agent for someone else. All right? Because that joins us together. And not only in this life, but lives to come. Or perhaps in lives past. Yes?
There's a bit double-edged. One question. Why would someone want to pursue wanting to be clairvoyant, to develop these mental powers? And the related question is, what is the difference between intuition and clairvoyance?
Why somebody, for the first one, why somebody would want to pursue the ability
to develop these powers. In many cases, it's a curiosity.
Well, that's one of the lower reasons.
Right.
Is that it is. I mean, it's to be able to see in the past, to be able to predict what the future would be, or even to be able to say what is happening now. As was stated by the second speaker, if it is not done with the highest good in mind, then you know you're risking endangering yourself and others. It is one of the powers of the soul, like we said, clairaudience, second sight, and we forget what the other ones are right now. But there are certain abilities that come with the development of our spiritual nature. Now, in regards to your second one, what is
intuition?
Intuition.
How is the difference between intuition and clairvoyance? Because I think there's a certain relation. We act on intuition, intuition I think comes to us.
Yes.
Clairvoyance is more an active thing.
Well, intuition is a faculty that needs to be cultivated, okay? And HPB makes a specific point of this, is that the secret doctrine is written to help develop the intuition in the race. Now, you can look at intuition, and it's a direct knowing. It's a direct understanding that within ourselves, all these answers lie. We just have locked them away. And some of us have thrown away the keys. All right? But there's a time in our lives, if not in this life or those to come, where we are wanting to know the truth, wanting to know the answers. Why is all this suffering taking place? What is going on? What is my place in this great universe?
Now, the whole idea that we're talking about, we're looking at all these powers as being separate. We're talking about intuition. We're talking about clairvoyance. And as we said, everything is dual. There's a higher and lower aspect to it. But they're all one. These are all, we'll use the word power again. This is what happens as we develop. We are accessing that higher nature of ourselves. And by being able to do that, we are able to transcend the whole material realization of our world. So it's not just, you know, one power, one, 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 one. It's all one, and it's all an access that we can have of our higher nature, and which is, we are all together on this as well.
And it goes back to that statement made earlier of true knowledge and true understanding. And there's only one way to get that, is to find where the truth is and learn it.
You mentioned that the focus is truth, or that the reason why we would develop these powers, for lack of a better word, is to search for truth. And you also mentioned how it's kind of like the ocean of theosophy. And I actually have this dolphin, and the dolphin is actually known to have a sense called sonar. I'm sure you're familiar with it, the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're saying, where does the truth lie? Well, I think that as we're all like young, or maybe we have had past lives and we will have future lives, but the one soul, I think, or the core aspect of it all is that we walk on this earth, and what grows from the earth but the trees. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm. who's saying that how sitting might not be all you obtain from sitting is sitting, but if you were able, my personal belief is that we as humans have sonar ourselves, and I believe myself that the trees also have that ability. And if you're searching for truth, I think you need but just go to the forest and sit and expand your sonar to where you're, hopefully by some water too, but you know, where you're able to kind of commune with the tree. I know that sounds strange, but to commune with the trees and kind of open your mind, like, and you're saying there's a lot of negative things to be aware of in the astral plane, but I think if you're like the trees, the love that emanates from these trees is just so pure that if you're just in the right setting, opening your mind and honing your sonar, I think you will find the truth.
Yes, you're here. That everything in the universe is alive, is conscious. Man is self-conscious, but all the kingdoms below man, they're conscious. The animal, the vegetable, the mineral, and even the elemental, they're all alive, and they all have consciousness. So through our ideas, through our basic ideas, our unity, our oneness, we attract to ourselves the same kind of lives that are for unity and not separateness. So you have to realize by what you do or who you are, we attract to ourselves. So our mission is to clean this up, to purify it, so that we can become a temple of God. But the idea has to be understood. You have to understand the ideas. And if you don't, you're just going to be going here and going there. And, you know. So this is a journey of many lifetimes. Many. But now it seems that we have gotten this lifetime where we are confronted with the truth that we've always wanted to know.
And we, to go along with that statement, the philosophy says that we are all one, that we are all connected, that we all are a spark of that deific essence, that what we do to one will reverberate to all. Just as an example, in Yellowstone, they had killed off all the wolves, and the environment around the rivers and the streams began to deteriorate because the wolves weren't killing off all the deer and the antelope and all those, because they were the apex predator. So now that the wolves are back in Yellowstone, the environment is much healthier. So it's just incredible how, you know, this is a perfect example of that connectiveness of all in all the world.
We like to, everybody here likes trees. We all like trees. We think they're very sacred. We think they're very sacred.
I'm a tree hugger.
Yeah.
Making, well, back.
The vast difference between communing with nature to understand your unity with it and sitting to develop a power that you wish to use to impress yourself or others. There's a world of difference. But we wanted to go back to the difference between intuition and clairvoyance. It's the same difference between talking to the author and reading their book.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we think the speaker who mentioned the word sonar, another word for that is intuition. We have all of this knowledge gifted. It comes with us every lifetime because we have lifetime after lifetime tried to work that path that was mentioned. And the sonar is the knowing there's more and trying to figure it out. And the path for this soul is to commune with nature. Another, it might be to do volunteer service. Whatever it is, it opens the heart and the mind, and that sonar is that intuition. Our job is to recognize that and become one with that.
Actually, when it comes to sonar, it actually is a power latent in the human being. And you've seen, you might watch it on YouTube one time, you can Google it on YouTube, about this young boy who was blind and developed sonar, and he would develop clicks in his jaw, and it would go out and come back to him, and he could recognize, he could distinguish between a fire hydrant versus a garbage can. He can walk down the street and avoid the traffic. It's amazing what he can do, just like bats and dolphins use sonar. It's very interesting. But when it comes to development, you know, choosing to develop one's clairvoyance, back in the days when HBB was still around, that was a big deal among members of the Theosophical Society, thinking that, well, we should develop our occult powers. And it became so big and so dangerous that actually HBB received a letter from her master's master, and it's called The Great Master's Letter that was published. She published this letter, and it was said by the Brotherhood that it's better that the my word's not theirs, I can't remember verbatim, but basically they said it's better that the Theosophical Society never ever existed than for the Theosophical Lodges to turn into Lodges of Occult Development. Mm-hmm. And so their thrust, interestingly enough, was they have to be lodges where universal brotherhood is taught and for people to prove it to themselves. But here's the dichotomy. Universal brotherhood, to truly prove in the deepest way that universal brotherhood is the fact of nature, the declaration for the ULT says what? To study the philosophy, exemplify the principles of the philosophy in our lives, which will bring about a true realization of ourself, the true realization of the self, which is the spiritual divine truth that we all are one. And in the pursuit of trying to prove that to yourself, naturally, these possibilities and powers are going to come about, and the result is that you'll have a more profound conviction in universal brotherhood. Mm-hmm. But the point is that the motive has to be to prove universal brotherhood. And if that's not what you're trying to do, then really best to stay away from theosophy, because you're just going to get caught up in some problems and make bigger problems for yourself.
It's one thing that we did read was that it was mentioned about these people that are hired by the police, They really don't have control over what it is that they're doing, which is one of the differences between the higher and the lower clairvoyant abilities. But what the philosophy does say is that at some point in time in a recent life or two or three, these people were dabbling in these practices that maybe they shouldn't have. So they're bringing somewhat of an ability forward here, but it's still not of a higher nature. And, you know, the whole idea with universal brotherhood is not the primary motive behind it. Yes.
If I may go back to the murder of Pythagoras, if one reached sufficient clairvoyant development or spiritual development to observe the impending murder of Pythagoras that hasn't happened yet, isn't that person karmically bound by having the privilege of that observation to act upon that knowledge in the physical realm?
Well, we don't see, there's a lot of things that we don't know. Maybe he knew he was going to be killed. We don't know that he didn't know.
But I mean a third person watching this, well, about to happen.
It's very funny. You know, if it's someone's karma, we can't stop it. If we stop it, it'll appear somewhere else in another way. We can only try to ameliorate the effects and give them right ideas and how this karma came about. Was through our own actions, not anyone else's. And our acts find us, if not in this life, in another. So that everything we put out comes back. So there is that great law of cause and effect. You know, Einstein, there's many things in his writings that are very theosophical, that for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. But you'll see through many of great minds that have brought forth much understanding for us are all based upon this wisdom. All of it is based on this wisdom.
To get back to this, if you knew that, if somebody knew that Pythagoras was going to be murdered, should that person prevent it or not? To broaden this, if you witness abuse of children, for instance, horrible things, if you, should you just stay there and watch and say it's karma, or should you consider it your privilege of witnessing this, which makes you responsible for either reporting it or doing something about it? You get my point?
Yes.
Well, the thing is, the karma of those children are being in that situation, and your karma is coming. This is only supposition. You can't really say, well, is this their karma or not? Is it your karma or not? But we've heard in meetings, it's like to err on the side of compassion, because you don't want to leave these children in a situation like that. They're already experiencing their karma as it is, being in that situation. And also, it's the karma of the parents or whoever is doing the abusing. So they're connected as well. And then there's the people that become aware of it. So our thinking would be to err on the side of the children's safety.
It's also...
Well, isn't that where intuition then comes in? Where you have to act on your intuition. What is it that I need to do?
Yes.
Was I made to see this to help, or...
Well, you know, by doing nothing, it's a greater crime for us, because, you know, one of the, you know, if we see what is wrong and we do nothing to ameliorate it or to slow it down or to stop it, or if we are not motivated to do something, we have to check our heart.
And these are really though two completely different subjects, to witness something where you could literally right then perhaps step in is completely different from a clairvoyant experience. Mm-hmm. And we think the answer was well stated. If you're there, it's your karma and the karma of those children for you to be there. So you should do something. The difficulty is deciding what to do. But in the clairvoyant case, if you can, you should warn the potential victim. And what would Pythagoras have said? That's interesting. He would not have taken any steps to protect himself from his own karma. So it's said that sometimes in dreams we are given warnings because someone else is not receptive. So we should warn, but that doesn't mean it's going to stop it.
We recall an incident or a few words spoken. Oh, don't you see? That's a quote from an elderly gentleman walking past our group. Oh, don't you see? And then we recall the term in Latin, amor vincit, love conquers all. And then we realized that things would fly apart if we did not practice universal brotherhood every day in our families, in our relationships. Oh, don't you see?
Yeah, well, it's said that these teachings are for naught. They're for naught. If we do not make them alive in our life, these are living truths. And by practicing, you bring them alive. By trying to strive for that perfectness or perfectibility, or that, what do I need to do just to go in that direction? But it's an effort. It's an effort that has to be resident in the heart, because we are not separate from anyone. Like you love your mother, like you love your father, we need to love our neighbor and our community. And we need to love those that we don't like. Really, we need to try and bring some kind of understanding to the world in which we live.
Oh, we just forgot where it was. Oh, and in regards to those that we love, we've all experienced a bit of clairvoyance when we feel like, oh no, I'm just really worried about so-and-so. I don't know why. I just keep getting this feeling. They keep coming into my mind. And then maybe you call them or they call you, and indeed there had been an issue with that person. So we all have it to some degree. And we think that if there's a strong attachment, that it may even be more of an experience for people.
Well, this power is latent within man. But we have to remember, who is this man that we're talking about? It's this witness, this perceiver, that is ever present and a witness to this life that we are living.
Just a kind of comical comment here. We know someone who was a nanny to two babies and raised them for the first few years of their lives, and then she got married and she had her own first child. And her first child didn't speak until the kid was, what, older than 3.5 years old, and there was a real concern about what was going on. Now, this kid is fine today, 10 years later, but in reflecting on it, people in their family think really that the mother knew so much about raising babies with this first, and she really is very, very intuitive, that this kid never really had to ask for anything as a baby because the mother just always knew what it needed, and so it didn't really, we really believe that it didn't just develop out of speech because it didn't have to. Interesting.
There's a hand. Oh, we thought there was a hand over here.
We know you have hands. Just put one up.
Yes. We have 4 minutes left. Oh, there's one.
Well, we think discernment is the key when we're talking about any of these karmic involvements. And that comes with practice and learning. But, you know, we were talking about children who were in danger. It's a very different thing for an adult who's in danger. We had a friend, and every time we tried to help, she was more badly beaten. Mm-hmm. So the discernment has to develop and find a way to help without creating harm. So definitely in the, we think it was, not sure if it was Mr. Lincoln or Mrs. Lincoln, dreamt about him getting shot at the theater the next night, and he went anyway. He was told about the dream and he went anyway. But discernment, we think is a very important thing to develop.
It's just like an intuitive knowing. So we don't know that there's a difference between developing discernment and developing intuition, but they're both, you know, something that we need to learn to trust.
And
yeah.
and the biggest stumbling block for all of us is discernment. What do we need to do? What should we do? And oftentimes we are frozen in our path because we don't know what to do. You know, we have to develop that and always err on the side of compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was mentioned that we should love even those people we don't like. Is there a case of Christ or Buddha meeting an evil person and how they related to them?
Well, there's that story of Jesus eating with the tax collectors, and somebody came up to him and they were very upset that he was, you know, eating with those evil people. Mm-hmm. And his response was something like, well, you don't need me, these people do. We think that that's paraphrased. Same.
Yes.
There's another story to your question about the Buddha, and I'm not sure whether I'm getting it right. The Buddha, there was this very evil person, and the Buddha said, well, you know, you can't change, and what you love, it's Mara. I forget what it means, but he said, just say Mara, 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 like a mantra. And if you run it together like Mara, 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 it's Rama, Rama, Rama. And so the guy apparently did this, and he became from a criminal a good person.
Mm.
Right, clever.
Well, that time is here, and just want to thank everybody, and hope to see you soon.
Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned.